Thanks for listening to the Best of Outkick the Coverage podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning from 6 to 9 a.m. Eastern, 3 to 6 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for Outkick the Coverage at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every morning on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
This is the Best of Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis on Fox Sports Radio.
Talked a lot about the NFL draft in hour one of the show. Hour two, I want to pivot a little bit. We're going to talk in the NFL draft with Dan Wetzel and how well I thought it went and how I thought just splendidly it was put together in general. And we're going to talk with him here in a little bit. But first, I wanted to talk more about the Jordan documentary, in particular, how well done I think this is and what it's saying and presenting for so many people out there who might otherwise not necessarily be that familiar with Michael Jordan. And it sounds crazy to say, but I put my own kids in this camp, and being able to watch this documentary with them on Sunday. We watched a lot of the NFL draft on Thursday and Friday. In fact, I don't think we hardly missed a pick, me and my boys, on Thursday and Friday. We watched the NFL draft all day. Not as much on Saturday. Weather was good. We got outside with them a little bit, and they were running around. But on Sunday night, one of the cool things I would say about the quarantine in general, in terms of time you get to spend with your family, is I don't know about you guys, but a lot of times when the frenzy of day-to-day activity is going on with your kids, I've got, like I said, a 12, a 9, and a 5-year-old. We got Little League Baseball, which, by the way, our entire season has been canceled for both boys, so that's not going to happen. We've got one of my sons plays in chess team, right? We've got basketball. We've got all different sorts of kid-related activities that are often going on and very busy on the weekends. Not to mention, you know, my wife and I will go out to dinner, or we've got friends that we'll hang out with as well. But for the past 6 weeks or so, we've been in the house almost every night. And in fact, we have been in the house every night. And we've watched a lot of movies together. And so, for instance, on Thursday and Friday night, we watched the draft. That's what the whole family got around. We had pizza. We watched the draft. It's a lot of fun. And again, I thought the NFL did a splendid job putting on the draft. And then on Saturday night, one of the things I've been trying to get my oldest two boys to do is read more. And so I've got them reading the Harry Potter books in a way to try to encourage them to read more and play Madden less. Because I don't know about your kids, but my kids would play Madden video game. My youngest would play Minecraft. Like, they would play video games all day long. And I'm not one of these parents out there who's like, oh, you know, your brain's going to be rotted if you played video games. Because I grew up in the Mike Tyson punch out, Tecmo Bowl, Major League Baseball, RBI Baseball. Like, I grew up in that era playing all those games, leading into the early variations of Madden, NBA Jam, all that stuff I grew up playing. So my parents might well have thought, oh, that's going to rot your brains, like video games are the devil. Well, my generation of parents now, we grew up on video games. I think we turned out okay. I think the kids are probably going to turn out okay. It doesn't mean I want them sitting around playing video games all day. And so being able to share things. So we watched the Harry Potter movie, Sorcerer's Stone, Episode 1, with the whole family, and they loved it, right? Because the kids both finished the first Harry Potter book. And so we watched that. We're trying to encourage them. We'll watch more movies together. But we watch movies basically 3 or 4 nights of the week. We've watched movies together. Whole family movie. Whole family sits around. It reminds me a little bit of my youth when the 1980s, when everybody watched the same thing on television. You know how we've reached this new era where everybody has something that's made specifically for them? But it used to be I was a member of the Cosby Show, Family Ties, Generation, Growing Pains, Who's the Boss, whatever those shows were that we all grew up watching. Sit down and all watch them together. Your grandma could watch it. Your 8-year-old sister could watch it. Mom and dad could watch it. Fresh Prince of Bel-Air. Everybody sits down and watches the same show. It's kind of what we're doing now. And that's how I felt about this Michael Jordan documentary for a second straight Sunday, where we built the whole evening around everybody's going to sit down and watch this story about Michael Jordan and the 1990s Bulls. And my kids are enraptured by it because the 1990s are far enough away to them that it seems really old, right? Like my nine-year-old is like, Dad, they didn't even have a three-point line when Michael Jordan was playing in college. I'm like, yeah, you know, the three-point line used to not be on the basketball court. He's like, what? What are you talking? That's crazy. So Steph Curry could have been shooting. Yeah, Steph Curry could have been shooting from anywhere. It only cost, counted 2 points. When Steph Curry's dad started playing basketball, there was no three-point line at all. And he's like, oh, my God. You know, his world is just blown. His mind is blown. But they've heard about Jordan as being kind of this legendary character. And to be able to sit and basically not know the stories that well. They don't know what's going to happen in the series against the Detroit Pistons. So they're watching it if you're young and you're not like a hardcore student of basketball history, which most young kids aren't. They know what's happened in their era. Then they're watching it and they're like, oh my God, the Pistons were just hammering Michael Jordan. Yeah, I'm like, yeah, they didn't have flagrant ones and flagrants two, and people didn't flop in the NBA back in the day like it's soccer. And they're just like enraptured by the entire process. And I got to say, it is just so incredibly well done, even for people like me, to take me back in time because I was a young kid when I had an opportunity to watch Jordan. I was rooting as hard as you can root for anybody for Michael Jordan to get past the Detroit Pistons. And I remember watching those games like as much and as aggressively as I could as a fan. And I just remember that feeling of being a young kid and watching Jordan win his first title against the Magic Johnson era Lakers. Granted, the Lakers were injured. I know there's people out in L.A. like, well, that wasn't the real – yeah, okay. Injuries on that Lakers team, but the beginning of the Michael Jordan era, we saw him kind of rising to prominence. And I talked about in hour one, probably talk about it more in hour three as well, that a huge part of Jordan's ascension – was predicated on other people being willing to be the villains and letting him be the superstar. But man, I got to tell you, I absolutely loved it. A lot of great sports television for a family for a change in this weekend, this Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday.
This is Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis.
We bring in Yahoo Sports national columnist Dan Wetzel to join us now. Dan, appreciate you joining us. I thought you nailed it with your column, and I think it's something that we talked about on the show, but also that many people felt as well. The NFL has gotten a lot of criticism over the last several years because they are sort of the elephant in the room. It's easy to just kind of take swings at them and point out things that they did wrong. But man, I thought they delivered, and ESPN and the NFL Network and all the prognosticators and everything else, pretty much a fantastic sports viewing opportunity for many of us around the country on Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. And I know you did as well. How did they manage to get this so right?
Well, I don't know if they had they had a choice. It was like, this is what we have. And then it just worked. I thought it was
so well.
It was, I've gone to a lot of drafts for the last 20 years and they're really boring in person. The green room is a really, like, tense, awkward place.
Yep.
Everyone's dressed up. It's almost like they're not comfortable. There's camera. It's just an awkward place. And so when we got rid of that by going into the prospects' houses, and I know they do that some later in the draft, but to do it on all of them, and then to have fairly small crowds because of the quarantine – I just thought it was great. You just really saw what these guys were about. And like, this is their family, and this is their living room, and this is how they dress, and this is their value. It was just real. I think that was kind of it. And you just, you know, hey, there's grandma. Look at that. She's had, you know, and you could just feel like you were one of them. And then at the same time, you're looking into the homes of the GMs and the coaches. And so you have almost the same thing, and all of a sudden you'll go, oh, wow, I didn't know that, you know, gosh, Matt Rule's kids or little daughters are cute, and, you know, like, you know, like just people and the different, it's just the different stuff. Cliff Kingsbury's house and Jerry Jones's yacht and Mike Zimmer with a roaring fire and Belichick throwing his dog on there to be funny and, you know, I just thought it was great. You didn't know what was coming next, and it wasn't canned. Produced. It wasn't like, look at these fireworks. These are exciting. It was like, no, this is pretty exciting. So I just thought it was terrific. I thought Goodell was like the everyman, like in a very unexpected way. Other than like the fans booing and the little thing, you know, I thought almost every gimmick they came up with worked.
I'm with you. And I know, look, I was at the big spectacle in Nashville last year because it's my hometown. 600,000 people were there. I was there on multiple days. I took my family down on the opening Thursday of the first round to be able to watch it. The atmosphere was phenomenal. It was electric. It was exhilarating. It felt right last year. This felt right this year. You know, I mean, and I thought the tone was set from the first draft pick when we go into the home of Joe Burrow and he's sitting on a couch between his mom and his dad, and that's it. You know, like, I mean, in his 704 represent the region of Ohio that he's from. And I thought that, you know, it, for the most part, there were some exceptions, but I thought for the most part, we eliminated a lot of the hangers-ons. And I think it kind of reflects what people have in their own life going on right now, which is a lot of the bells and whistles are gone, and you kind of strip it back down to the basics. I don't know about you. I know you got two daughters. I'm sure you're around with the house with them a ton. I got three sons, you know, spending an inordinate amount of time with them. But it's almost like in this sort of crazy web of external chaos, you in some way recognize how important the people are who are closest to you, and a lot of the noise disappears. And I feel like a lot of the time you see these draft parties, oh, there's 50 people there, there's 100 people there. Right. And you might care about those people, and you might be glad that they're there, but they're not all integral to your day-to-day life. I feel like for many of us, and maybe most of us, we basically strip back everything to the integral moments of our life. And I thought for the coaches and GMs, you know, seeing their kids, I thought was fantastic. For the owner, seeing, you know, a lot of their grandkids sometimes in the shots, if they were in the shot, was great. And I just thought it was a really, really good look for the NFL, which oftentimes seems like this big corporate leviathan, and it humanized what is oftentimes a very business-like environment.
Yeah, you know, the NFL is the ultimate, like, there's no such thing as excess, right? It's like right. They want it all. Hey, NFL, for your Super Bowl halftime, would you like J-Lo or Shakira? We'll take both.
Right.
You know, like, that's their mindset.
So yeah, that's a great point.
They want the craziest stuff, and this was supposed to be Vegas. And, yeah, it just – there was a simplicity to it. And even, you know, it just – it the Burrow one was so understated. It's just mom, dad, and Joe. And you know, we were laughing, you know, on our podcast, like, you live the American dream. You're the number one draft pick in the NFL, and you're going to be in Vegas. Like, you're going to celebrate
the number one
draft pick in Vegas. No, sorry. That night's out. You're going to go to your boyhood bedroom. After, like, sharing a wine with your mom, right?
Yeah.
You got any, like, white wine still in the fridge. But, you know, at the end of the day, that's a special thing, too. And so I just thought it was cool. There were so many funny things you couldn't believe, you know, just out of like, you know, Jordan Love had like takeout in front of him. I think like there's murals on the wall and t-shirts and just, some of them made balloons. It just was, I just thought it was terrific. Like I said, it was real. It was just hard to turn away. You just want to see what was next. I was really fearful that the broadcast would be one of these like Brady Bunch Zoom calls where everyone's talking over each other. I thought Trey Wingo was phenomenal at just directing traffic, considering the logistics. I wouldn't even know how they pulled this thing off with all of these videos from around the country. I thought it got the highest ratings ever for a draft. Obviously, part of that is we're sports starved and stuck inside. But I also think the product was so good that people didn't turn away. And then they tuned in again for Friday night and then tuned in again in record numbers on Saturday for rounds of the draft that, you know, really don't matter. Most of these guys aren't going to make the team. So just a terrific job by it. And, just a really good thing by the NFL, and I'm glad they stuck to it, did their draft, stuck with their schedule, and you know, humanize the players, the coaches, the GMs in ways we've never really seen.
All right, I talked about this already, but I think it's an important lesson for people who are making decisions. if the NFL had made decisions based on the Twitter comments, right, when they decide, hey, we're going to stick to free agency or we're going to stick to the regular schedule of the NFL draft, even some of the most well-known media people who cover the NFL, Adam Schefter, for example, said it was an awful decision by the NFL to keep the draft where it was. He went on ESPN and ripped them for it, and then, of course, ended up being a part of the draft. Mike Florio, I think, said this is going to be a disaster, like that will live in infamy if they decide to keep NFL free agency going. And then 15.6 million people tune in on Thursday, blowing the audience out of the water. I got to give the NFL credit for doing it, but also not listening to the noise. So here's the big question for you. Have sports leagues learned anything during this process about how often what is getting a lot of tension on social media doesn't actually represent their meat and potatoes audience? Or do you think they'll remain sort of in the fetal position, worried all the time about what people are going to say on social media going forward? And the reason why I ask it is, it's a big deal for the NBA or the MLS or Major League Baseball or the NHL to come back. They may get ripped by some people online for making that decision, but I think the marketplace is speaking in terms of the audience for The Last Dance, which we're going to get to in a minute, or the audience for the NFL draft. General American public is not on Twitter. Joe Sixpack isn't sitting around saying, no, no, you can never put sports on television again. He wants to watch.
Twitter is just a total waste of time. I mean, it really is. Even something that gets like, you know, if you got 1,000 comments back to a tweet and you scrolled through that, it would feel like 20 million.
Yeah,
I mean, it just would feel like you are getting buried.
And you know, because sometimes that happens.
I've done that, yes.
Sometimes it happens to you. Sometimes it happens to me. And you're like, oh, my God. When you're in the middle of it, if you actually check your mentions, you can be like, oh, my God, the whole world is reacting to this right now. And that's how it feels when it hits your phone. And frankly, I think that's how it feels if you're Roger Goodell or you're the NFL's head of PR or somebody else. They're like, oh, my God, look at what all these people are saying. But it's not the real world.
It's 1,000 people.
That's right.
It's 1,000 people. There's 300 million. It's like stepping outside in a downpour and going, oh, my God, build an ark. And then the cloud moves away in 5 minutes and nothing happens. That your lawn got nicely watered.
Yeah.
You know, but it feels that way because the medium is set up.
Yes.
You spin the wheel.
And the way the media covers it, to be fair, because they cover Twitter reactions
as if
they're representative of the real world.
Laziest thing ever is like, so someone's getting heat on Twitter for something. It could be anything, right? And then it's like they quote three tweets, and who knows if they're even real people. I mean, they're bots, and there's literally, you know, obviously we have huge campaigns to do stuff, and it's just the whole thing's absurd. So, no, you should never listen to Twitter. There was a concept. I mean, there were two things going on. One, the NFL, there was the old school NFL GM that was going, I can't do this. I can't get to the Texas A&M Pro Day. How am I going to scout these players? And it was a bunch of garbage. Deal with it. Okay. We all got to do different things. Watch more tape. And then at the end, if you talk to all these guys Saturday and Sunday, which I've done, did a bunch of, they're like, this was great. I got time with my kids. I actually think I was a better scout. I watched tape, then I went and had a tea party with my 4-year-old daughter, and I went back up and watched more tape. They weren't missing these things at all. They were going, you know what? I didn't fly to the Oklahoma State Pro Day only to see the guy I was interested in get picked to before me, knowing I wasted 48 hours, right? Like, they liked it, and they're looking and going, there's a better work balance here maybe we can do. Now, I don't think that'll happen. The other was, people are dying, and this is going to be tone deaf. And I was like, anybody who behooves anyone, yes, people are dying. People are dying all the time. And it's 50, you know, this is terrible, okay? I'm not undermining. This is absolutely ridiculous. People are dying nonstop. It's horrible.
Nobody is in
favor. Take it out on Joe Burrow.
Yeah, yeah. Nobody is in favor of death. That's the flip side to this. Right. There's an argument out there, especially on social media, where if you do anything, it's like you don't care about people dying. No, everybody wishes that we were all immortal. I don't want to die. You don't want to die. You don't want your parents to die. I don't want my parents to die. I certainly don't want any of my kids to die. I would sign the papers right now for everybody in the world to be immortal if I could. That's not real life, right? And so for those of us who are out there, sports are an important escape oftentimes from real life. And I feel like that is getting missed in the overall conversation. It's not saying that sports are more important than life. It's certainly not saying that sports are overshadowing more serious things in life. Sports always have been and always will be the toy chest of life. But, you know, your kids still play with toys even while chaos is going on outside of the house. And adults like to kick back and watch Netflix or watch their favorite sporting events the same as they would if, even if things weren't as bad.
Absolutely. And back in the day during wars and during depressions, they made sure sports leagues stayed open. Right? You remember the
That's
movie
right.
A League of Their Own? They made
yeah.
the girls a professional baseball league because people in Rockford, Illinois need something to do at night. And there's something about, you know, this the World War II sucks and it's a grind and I'm worried about my two sons are over, but at least I can tune into the Dodger game at 8 o'clock and it takes my mind off it. If anyone was going to take, like, how can you possibly Joe Burrow celebrate when someone's dying? It's absurd. Someone's getting married. Someone's buying a car. Someone's doing whatever. Is it okay if I sit there and watch HGTV all night or something like that? Is that okay? What's okay?
Look, we didn't stop sports during the Vietnam War, right? And I mean, it was obviously probably the last massive chaotic event in terms of pulling people
through
a draft.
9/11, we stopped it for 4 days.
9/11, which was a cataclysmic event for everybody out there.
That was just until we figured out security. Weekend after, I was at a college. I was at South Bend, Indiana for the Notre Dame football game. Notre Dame, I think Michigan or Notre Dame, somebody. And it was a brilliant scene. They did an unbelievable job. I'll never forget. They put the flag up and drop it to half mast, and it's a beautiful day, and it's mournful, and it was wonderful, you know?
Yes.
It was a way to honor.
And, now, and a lot of people remember
stop this.
Regardless of your politics, a lot of people remember George W. Bush going out and throwing the first pitch, right? Like in a flak jacket.
Phenomenal.
And what it meant for national cohesion and also national mourning, right? Coming together in large groups is a cathartic moment for many people. And it was an important emblem of we're going to be through this and normalcy is going to prevail in some way sooner or later, right? And so you've written this, but I think this is important. Like Dana White, Vince McMahon, whatever you may think of the WWE, I actually believe these guys deserve more credit for trying to make it happen. You pointed out, look, Dana White could easily, as a rich guy, same thing for Vince McMahon, just have kicked back and said, hey, I'm disappearing for a couple of months. We don't need to put on any events at all. But the American spirit is about finding a way, and those guys have found ways, in theory, to get their sports back in front of the community.
Yeah, I think they all should. I talked to Dana White about it when he's trying the first one that ended up getting, you know, he couldn't pull off, but he's like, I live in, you know, he's a, I don't know, hundreds of millions of dollars. So I got a gym in my house. I got a movie theater.
Yeah.
I got pools. I got it. I'm fine. I can do this forever. But that's not what that's not what we should be doing. And so I just think in any single business we have out there, it's try to find a way to do it safely.
Yeah.
Don't do it recklessly, but don't do it safely. Can you open whatever business you have the moment you're allowed to? Can you figure out how to do it? And that's what I think every business is trying to do. Some of them are going, I can't do it. There's states right now that are open. I read, like, Georgia, you can be your bowling alley can be open. Well, some of the bowling alley guys are like, I can't do it. They're not open. That's fine. Other ones are like, I think we figured it out. Fine. Open up. Whatever you can do safely, you should do. The idea that they were going to – this was going to be an insult I just thought was completely missing the mark on the NFL draft. It was a great moment. It was a celebratory moment. It's a hopeful event always. It's a celebratory event always. It's everybody thinks they did great. Every player get picked thinks they're making they're going to be an all-pro. Every team thinks they just got seven great players, right?
Yep.
What's the great line? I thought my second round pick would I get him in the first round.
We never thought this guy was going to be there in all of our mock drafts. Every single player that's ever been drafted, the team never thought they were going to be
here's
there.
Here's mom. Here's dad. I wrote in my column, this was about the home team, right? The home team. both sides, and everyone roots for the home team because this is everyone was sitting in their home. It was a great event, and so whatever that criticism was. But in terms of Twitter, Twitter is the biggest garbage indicator of what's going on in the world because of the way it's set up. A little bit seems like a lot. And in a country of 370 million, in a world of whatever, 7 billion, a couple hundred Twitter comments are still just a couple hundred people. And I can go stand on the corner in Manhattan, well, normally, I can, you know, right now, and scream and reach a couple hundred people. That's it.
Are you good coming back to finish out the hour with us?
Sure.
This is Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis.
Dan Wetzel with us now. Dan, we were just talking about the NFL draft, but Michael Jordan, Dennis Rodman, Steve Kerr, you got all different sorts of people. Scottie Pippen. The storylines are pretty amazing from those late 90s Bulls teams. I don't remember. I don't even know. I mean, you're not that much different in age than me. Were you covering any of the NBA at all during the Jordan era dynasty with Phil Jackson's team?
I was at the final this year. I don't want to give away the plot. Spoiler, they make the finals. I was at the finals that year, and I did cover Jordan a little bit to the tail end of his career, and I have some in his role as an executive.
Have you ever seen anything like – because a lot of people, it blows my mind. This is where I start to think, man, I'm starting to get to be an old guy. There are 25 and 26-year-olds out there right now, which, you know, frankly, you're not that young when you're 25 or 26. You know, we're not talking about 12 or 13-year-olds. 25 or 26-year-olds out there listening to us right now who never remember seeing Michael Jordan play a game, right? So they are watching this documentary now, and they've heard dad or they've heard grandpa or they've heard their uncle or maybe their older brother or sister, whoever it is, they've heard them kind of talk about Jordan in this kind of legendary way, but they haven't actually seen him play. I keep trying to tell my kids who watched last night with me, particularly the 12 and 9-year-olds, just how big of a rock star Michael Jordan and these Bulls were. Can you even put into words, like, who would you say in a modern era is even close to the Jordan era Bulls?
Kids in their early 20s, they might barely remember the Shaq, Kobe, Lakers.
Yeah, that's a good point, too.
If you want to feel old, it's... college freshmen were born after 9/11. You know, I mean,
that blows my mind too. Because we were talking about 9/11 earlier. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, what was that? Yeah. So
I remember this was like a whoa moment for me. I was talking with a bunch of Tennessee college kids, and I was like, it suddenly hit me. This was like last year, 2 years ago, that they have no recollection of like Tennessee football ever being good. Right. They don't remember Peyton Manning. Like, they don't remember Phil Fulmer, the 1998 national championship. It might as well be 1948 to them, right? Like, it doesn't. And I remember that, those ages. Like, I remember my dad talking about players in the 1970s, and I was like, Dad, I wasn't even born, you know. I don't care about any of those old guys, you know. And now I'm thinking, you know, when you mentioned Tim Tebow, people sometimes give you a blank stare. They're like, oh, the guy was playing baseball? You know, like, they don't remember his college career, which is wild to think about, too.
Yeah, we were watching ESPN, and there was a Peyton Manning thing on, and then he had Eli with him, and she's like, he has a brother? My God, here we go. Yeah.
That's fantastic.
Right. So, where were we?
Are your girls watching this documentary at all? Are they interested in any way on it?
Well, my older one, but she's a Piston fan, so she does not – she was trained not to like the Bulls.
Yeah, right.
Okay, so as was in the segment, and her favorite, she became an NBA fan because there's a 30 for 30 on the Bad Boys, which is 2 hours long, and it's tremendous. It's a great.
And my wife is from Detroit and grew up a fan of the Pistons as well. So
I
like that whole area.
I'm not a Detroit fan. I was not a Piston fan growing up, but I live here now, and she's a Piston fan, and we go to Piston games, but. The Bad Boy, if you're looking for companion viewership, you can kind of watch the other side of the story, right?
Yes.
I think some of the Pistons,
because they're the clear villain.
Jerry
Krause gets a pass for a change after being the true villain of episode 1 and 2. The Bad Boys are clearly the villains right now of the American sports landscape.
For the Bulls.
Yeah.
I, you know, look, Brady, you know, you know, if LeBron had been on one team, or you know, the way you go to a Golden State game, I mean, none of these were quite as big as Jordan because he was just so huge, but like the way the arena, if anybody out there went to see Golden State when they're rolling pregame, there would be 3,000, 4,000 people there to watch Steph Curry dribble and warm up.
Right.
Like and shoot around. Like
they came to, like people came to watch McGuire back before we knew he was a steroids
practice,
guy,
yeah,
to watch batting practice, right? Like just to watch the ball get launched into the crowd.
Yeah, there'd just be thousands of people in the arena 2 hours before the game just to watch Steph Curry dribble with two balls. And
yeah,
and you're like, God, this is unbelievable. This is a rock show, right? The Bulls were that all the way. I mean, Jordan was so famous and so intimidating, yet so approachable at times. And just the magnitude of the fame, because there were so few television channels, so few magazines, newspapers, and he was the one that just was on it all the time. And he was there were so few commercials, and he was in them all. So it's like the magazine shows it. He's on the cover of Sports Illustrated. He's on the cover of the USA Today. He's in your local paper. He's the game you're watching. And so the ratings are bigger. Everything was so big. So I think there's a little bit of Tom Brady in that. I think, you know, wherever Tom and the Patriots went was very, very significant. But, and you also got a little bit, you certainly get this with the Patriots right now, and you do get it with some of the Warriors. When you go to the opposing arena, you know, a third of the place is wearing Jordan jerseys.
Right.
You know, I used to say, like, if you had Bulls tickets, you only get it. The guys going to the game always had a lot better looking dates at the game. Like, you know, it's the girl.
Oh, I mean, I say now, like,
out with you,
yes.
She's like, yeah, I'll go to the Bulls game. Okay,
yeah,
I'll do that. Yeah. Okay.
No, I've said the same thing for like big college football games. You have like, I'll talk to my friends and they'll be like, oh, you know, we're not taking the kids to the big games, right? Or you talk to the women and they're like, oh, this is a, you know, rival dress that I'm wearing today. Like for big college football games in the South, you talk to a girl, she'll be like, oh, you know, if you're an Alabama fan, she's like, oh, this is my Auburn dress. This is not
right,
my
right.
Western, not my Western Carolina
right.
dress. I'm saving
right.
the A game. For the A game, right? I mean,
yeah.
Like people do that. And it is like that when Jordan would come to town, it's like the circus is coming to town, or, you know, like the Rolling Stones back in the day, or Beyonce, or whoever the biggest act is. It's like, oh my God, like they are really coming here. And I talk about this to start off the hour, and I'm curious whether you agree with this. One of the most interesting things about Jordan in general, and you kind of hinted at it with the Pistons, is most big superstars, they have a foil. And what I mean by that is, like, you were either a Tom Brady guy or you were a Peyton Manning guy, right? You were Phil
right.
Mickelson or you were Tiger Woods. You were, even in the NBA, Magic Johnson or you were Larry Bird. It was like Jordan, and there was nobody else on his level. And that's relatively rare, right? In the world of sports. And not only did Jordan not really have anybody else on his level, there were a series of people, one after the other, who was willing to play villain against him, right? So you had the bad boys who are the black hats, right? Like, they're the bad guys. Jordan's the white hat. And then you had Reggie Miller, Charles Barkley, a little bit of Gary Payton, right? Like, these are guys that seemed comfortable in their own skin being, quote-unquote, the bad guy. And we really don't see that nowadays. And that was huge for Jordan elevating his brand. It wasn't 100% accurate, but Jordan was, you know, the Wild West guy with the six shooter who had the heart of gold, and everybody else he was going up against were, you know, they were going to have the OK Corral duel, and they were the bad guy.
Right. And it was really the Pistons were the only ones that really were able to take it down, other than the early day Celtics when Jordan's team wasn't there. But the Pistons were able to do it with that physical style and that leadership. And they were such an amazing team. And Isaiah Thomas is one of the most underrated players in the history of the National Basketball League, Basketball Association, part because Jordan hated him, and Jordan froze him out of the Dream Team, and he hated the Pistons. That rivalry was not just a little bit; that was all the way. There were beating on Bill Laimbeer and Rick Mahorn, just these perfect foils. But that team was great, and they were able to stop them. And then that was an era when it was like, it kept happening, and it was like, can the Celtics get past the Sixers? And then they did, and then the Celtics and Lakers are going, and it was, can the Pistons get past the Celtics? And then they did, and then it was, can the Bulls get past the Pistons? And they did, and then it was like, can the Knicks get past the Bulls? No, they couldn't. And you had these just multi-year kind of war, basketball wars going on that were just phenomenal. And so that was why you had that that similar, like, can Peyton Manning ever get past Belichick and Brady? And
that's
they
right.
did. And you had that. And so it was a great thing where you didn't have to watch all year and be like, oh, I'm going to watch that series. And obviously you had these huge personalities. And what I appreciate out of the Pistons is they didn't – everyone else is, you know, genuflecting to Michael Jordan, and then it's like, yeah, we don't care. We just don't care. He's a great player, but we don't care.
We're going to beat
the crap
out of him.
We got our guys. And I think that's what made it such a great rivalry.
Dan Wetzel, it's been fantastic. Appreciate the time this morning. Thanks for getting up early with us. At Dan Wetzel on Yahoo Sports. On Twitter, you can read him at Yahoo Sports pretty much every day. Appreciate my man. Talk to you soon.
Take care. Have a good one.
Be sure to catch live editions of Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis weekdays at 6 a.m. Eastern, 3 a.m. Pacific.
No limitations apply, honestly, to the momentum that the return of sports is starting to get. Now, day-to-day numbers, and I've been trying to be as straightforward with you guys as I possibly can. You know that day-to-day numbers can fluctuate quite a bit in terms of how people are responding to the coronavirus, right? And what I mean by that is the data fluctuates. We're getting a lot more testing in general, which means that total number of cases can be growing substantially. And it can kind of sometimes start to confuse you a little bit. We got a lot of states that are starting to open back up in a big way. We got Texas opening back up, Oklahoma, Colorado, Georgia, Tennessee, starting to work their way back in South Carolina, back into the process of opening up. I think Montana, lots of different states, right? The overall trend lines are becoming incredibly positive. We had one of the lowest dates of total deaths in a very long time from the coronavirus on Sunday. In particular, the state of New York hit a low for the entire month of April. There's no doubt that the state of New York and that New Jersey and Connecticut, which are a little bit behind the state of New York, that they have hit their peak and they have begun to decline. The same thing also seems true in the Detroit area, in the state of Michigan. And in general, it appears almost every state has hit their peak in general, right? Not 100% certain. There's still a lot of moving parts in a country that has 330 million people like the United States. There are so many different day-to-day decisions that are made, tests that are taken, health difficulties, all of those things, right? But the trend lines are right now incredibly positive in terms of the direction in which the virus is going. And I believe that a big part of that now is that we need to start to think about how to get back the NBA, how to get back Major League Baseball, the NHL, MLS, all these sports. We know already that that it's very likely that we're going to have the UFC back and that we're going to have NASCAR back based on previous conversations. But I thought this was really interesting. I don't see it as a partisan issue. I don't see it as a Republican or a Democrat issue. I thought what I heard Andrew Cuomo, the governor of New York, the hardest hit state in the entire country, say yesterday about how he wanted baseball back and some of the challenges that might come with that. Listen to Andrew Cuomo, the governor of New York, talking in response to a question about whether baseball could come back. The Yankees, obviously, and the Mets are a big part of the New York City area sports marketplace. Here was Andrew Cuomo talking about it.
Unusual sports. Do you imagine, you know, Yankees games happening in an empty Yankee stadium this summer?
I've talked to the many of the sports owners and sports companies. Look, I don't know. It's not my business. I don't know the economics. But if your choice was players stay home, I don't know what players get when they stay home by their contract. But assume the players are getting less money or no money, right? If you could make the economics work without the seat sales, right? And you could have teams play without the seat sales, but you had televised and you had the television revenue and whatever else went with that, you know, we're in a different place. You know, be creative, try to figure it out. But if players could get paid more than staying home and owners would get some revenue versus total shutdown, why not? I'd love to watch.
Have you spoken to Mets and Yankees? Yes. Mets and Yankees?
Yes. No, I've talked to a number of sports owners. I don't want to get into names. But it does depend. I know enough to know the economics of baseball are a little different than the economics of basketball, a little different than the economics of other sports. So it would have to be up to them that they do an economic analysis that says, yeah, some revenue is better than no revenue, and my players are willing to negotiate a contract reduction. And if they could do it, yeah, but everybody has to think outside the box, right? Because there is no box.
That was Andrew Cuomo, and again, that's one reason why I am so incredibly optimistic about sports coming back in this country, because it's not a partisan issue. I think the Dana Whites, the Vince McMahons, all of these guys who are working hard, whether it's the UFC or WWE, to get sports back, I think they deserve as much possible praise as we can give them. America's can-do spirit demands that sports come back sooner rather than later, and we get back to a sense of normalcy. We'll talk more about Jordan, more about the NFL draft, and Dan Wetzel, Yahoo Sports national columnist.